Greetings, my friends, and welcome to the Paula Gordon Show, conversations with people at the leading edge. I'm Paula. Some of the most exciting work at the leading edge is being done studying life itself. Our guests, Stuart Kaufman and Charles Raison, both are exploring this frontier from quite different perspectives, and both started out as medical doctors. Dr. Kaufman is now a famous theoretical biologist. Dr. Raison has long been a psychiatrist and is now doing research on mind-body interactions related to depression and fatigue. While they both come out of classical reductionist science, their continuing explorations also open the way for me to ask them, where does hope figure into the life sciences? Surprising as that question may seem, their answers may be even more so. First, theoretical biologist Stuart Kaufman.
I think we need to find some sense of the sacred across all of our secular and religious traditions as a global civilization is of some form, either heterogeneous or homogeneous, is emerging before our fundamentalisms that we're retreating into kill us.
Yeah.
Now, a transcendent, omniscient, loving God certainly offers hope. I mean, that God loves you, and you're going to go to heaven, and it's going to be great. If God is, as I want to say, the creativity in the universe, which is partially lawless, because a law is a compact description of the regularities of a process, and we can't have it for these things. So we're faced with partial lawlessness. This sense of God is not a God who can love me back, because it's not an agent. It is the creativity of nature. Go out in the woods and experience it. And what I find is this new sense of membership, stewardship, knowing that we're stupid, awe, in something vastly bigger than me, in this co-creating biosphere. That's hope, because love itself is hope. You're the psychiatrist, but love itself carries hope.
So you would say that algorithmic processes cannot engender that sense of mystery or sacredness, that there's something built into the human mind that to have this sort of, it's an affective experience and it's also an intellectual experience, it must be about things that cannot be completely described with mathematics, which basically means that they're not fully lawful, and that things that fall under those domain become vitiated of their of that whatever it is, that unknowableness. And that unknowableness in itself does not mean that unknowableness, it could be God, it could be the devil. And really, I mean, if you don't know, you don't know, right?
You don't know.
But that there's something about that state that then at least opens the door for you to have an emotional experience, that there's something, you can choose to have hope.
That's Dr. Charles Raison. He's a psychiatrist and researcher at Emory University. Dr. Raison is deeply interested in mind-body interactions, particularly as they relate to the immune system, depression and fatigue, and the effects of Buddhist compassion meditation. He served as director of emergency services at the UCLA Hospital in Los Angeles, where he also was associate director of consultation evaluation services. Stuart Kaufman is the theoretical biologist and complexity scientist who's challenging today's scientific orthodoxy, particularly reductionism, in his book Reinventing the Sacred, a new view of science, reason, and religion, as he did in At Home in the Universe. Dr. Kaufman received one of the first MacArthur Genius Awards. He's on the external faculty at the Santa Fe Institute, of which he is a co-founder, and he's founding director of the Institute for Biocomplexity and Informatics at the University of Calgary. Both men lecture widely. I had the pleasure to sit in with these two distinguished researchers as they sought to learn from each other and to expand the questions each is asking.
Dr. Stuart Kaufman, Dr. Charles Raison, if I were to have a patron saint, and I do not, I would say that our patron saint would perhaps be in common. I met you, Dr. Raison, when you were doing an elegant presentation of the Darwinian process in Western medicine. I met you, Dr. Kaufman, thinking about all kinds of issues that you articulated so beautifully in At Home in the Universe, all of which are deeply Darwinian.
Uh-huh.
That means that all three of us have a love of life in common, and the two of you, with the research you've done, you, Dr. Kaufman, as a theoretical biologist, and you, Dr. Rezaan, as a practicing psychiatrist and now also researcher, you start with a very fundamental premise that we could easily call Darwinian, couldn't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The fact that you're both docs probably makes a difference in the way both of you think about most everything, doesn't it?
No, what do you think? For me, sure, of course, because that's a lot of what I do.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. You learn a lot of very general biology becoming a doctor. And I think it stands in very good stead. You know, I mean, I miss having been trained formally as a biologist, but not very much. I mean, anyway, biology is a funny field, you know, in the sense that it's enormously broad, but I hate to say this, it's not very deep.
Deep, yeah.
Right? I mean, you could get to the frontier of any area. Once you've learned the fundamentals of DNA, RNA, and proteins, and a little bit about population genetics and so on, I think you can get to the frontier of any area of biology in a couple, three months of struggling.
Yeah, that's interesting. Why is that? I mean, that's
It's not like physics. We don't have this deep mathematical structure that you have to spend 15 years learning, right?
Yeah.
Because there isn't a deep theoretical biology, and I say that as a theoretical biologist.
Yeah. You came to Atlanta, Chuck, because you were interested in putting the mind and body together in a kind of silly way of saying it, but your interest in how the Eastern tradition could influence biology.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I was interested. I'd had this interaction with the Dalai Lama's sister, and because of that I met very, very intelligent Tibetan monk who I'd go out to dinner with once a week, and he told me all these stories about these guys, what they do at these monasteries, and I got really interested in some of these strange meditation procedures. These guys, sort of their central procedures to try to raise their body temperature by sort of breath for long periods of time, and I really, this is actually what started me on all this. I got so obsessed with this idea of why would these guys, for thousands of years, do this? What's up with, why would you want to change your body temperature to affect your mood? Because basically these guys did this to try to generate these intense, sort of implacable, unmovable bliss states, you know? And so that's actually how I started, was I wanted to come out and figure out what were these guys doing from a Western perspective. Talk about reductionism. I wanted to try to figure out if I could see what were they, if they were doing it, how were they doing it? I thought it might cast some light into, you know, how people generate like intense positive emotions. So yeah, so I did. Never worked out. These guys wouldn't let themselves be studied. But
they wouldn't.
No. They had had some problems in the past being studied in the West. They'd all taken a death vow. Amazingly, literally. Yeah,
really?
They'd sworn that they would, and they were
die before they do it.
Mm-hmm. And they were pretty loyal to that. We got as far as meeting with the abbot of the monastery where they really do it. And, you know, it's funny. Tibetans don't tend to say no directly, but he told me the story about the head tumo practitioner. I said, you know, we were talking, well, can we ever study this guy? I said, you know, head tumo practitioner was out in India recently going around teaching, and he wanted to have some private time. So he went off and found a quiet spot beneath a tree and started doing tumo. And a goat wandered by and started watching him, and the goat went blind. That's it. They just changed subject. And I knew right there, nope, never going to happen. We're the goats, and we're never going to get to study this stuff.
So. But what had happened to was the bad experience?
Oh, I don't know. I probably can't go into that on tape. But there had been attempts to study these guys in the West, and a great deal of misunderstanding between the Tibetan practitioners and the Western scientists. And The Tibetans felt like they'd been poorly handled and damaged by the experience, basically what happened. And it became this sort of lore in the Tibetan monastic world. And so,
a happier ending to that story is it did give a jumping off point for studying a variety of things that interest you theoretically, that interest you in a practicing way, about the ways that minds and bodies affect each other, and the Darwinian processes that undergird, if you will, all of life. Mm-hmm. I am Paula Gordon. It is my delight to be with Dr. Stuart Kaufman, Dr. Charles, whom I will call Chuck Rezaan. We'll all be back in just a moment.